Welcome back to Will I Ever Learn Chinese? I'm Jeanette Seikel. And in this episode 10, I'm talking about making sense of the chaos. By the time I was at the intermediate stage, I was well versed in my learning routine. I was still primarily using the gamified learning program and keeping track of my progress through the chapters. I was told that I was doing great. How so? Well, the program was divided up into sections labeled beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And I was now, apparently, at the level above advanced. This was, I stress, the way the program was organized and the wording the company used. And it had nothing to do with my abilities if measured objectively. Of course, I knew deep down that I was only just entering the lower intermediate stage of language learning in linguistic terms. Being told that I was now more than advanced made me feel great, but at the same time it left me conflicted, as I was really only just starting to understand some of the Chinese spoken around me. In a way, this contradiction made me wonder if, perhaps, I would never be able to speak Chinese very well. I started to believe that it was just not possible, contrary to my own better judgment based on previous language learning experiences. Chinese just felt like an abyss of words that I did not yet understand and complex characters I had not seen before. I was starting to wonder when I would finally have learned all of the characters. Surely being more than advanced, I must have learned them all by now. I realized that in many of the other languages I had learned before, I was able to speak more coherently at this stage than I was able to in Chinese. This did not greatly surprise me, as I usually spoke other closely related languages to the ones I was acquiring. Thus, learning Portuguese, if there was a word I did not understand, I could use Spanish instead and hope for the best. Most of the time, that was no problem. Similarly, learning Danish, I would use Swedish to back me up if needed. None of this was really available to me when learning Chinese. Yet, I had also learned other languages where the option of relying on related languages was not really available. Still, I somehow must have been doing better, I thought. I could not quite put my finger on it at first, and started to call it that intermediate Chinese feeling. I assumed it must have something to do with the peculiarities of the language. Of course, learning the writing system was difficult, but there was also something in the spoken language that I struggled with, and it seemed to intersect with writing at times too. It all appeared to boil down to the fact that Chinese has many homophones, as discussed earlier. Those were the words that are pronounced the same, or at least in similar ways, but mean entirely different things. This had greatly confused me at the beginning, and it did not seem to let up as I was progressing. I had not encountered anything quite like it in other languages, and I found this aspect particularly challenging at the time. Take xian, for example, with a downward tone. I learned that it meant two things, with one accompanying character, namely, cash as well as now. Thus, there were two concepts that, from my perspective at least, seemed unrelated and that had the same pronunciation and the same character. Yet, that was not the end of xian with the downward tone. I soon learned that string or internet, county, a pair, envy, pie filling, and then later limit, donate, pitfall, they were all pronounced xian. When looking up xian in a dictionary, I found other forms, such as constitution, gland, and amaranth, to name a few. I also found that the word for a pair had the alternative pronunciation jian, occurring in the very frequent expression zai jian, goodbye. Looking further through the dictionary and including tonal minimal pairs, which means words pronounced tian, but with different tones, I found a whole lot more. These included very common words, such as xian, beginning, xian, shou, xian, dangerous, xian, fresh. I was coming across these words frequently now, and I was getting quite confused. I think some of this was down to the fact that my pronunciation was not yet great, and I sometimes struggled to produce or even hear the difference between similar words, such as xia, xiang, qian, xiang, and so on, which also have a lot of different meanings and which, again, are commonly used. It wasn't just the pronunciation that was tricky, though. I realized that there were two money-related words which sounded very similar to my ears and which I had, until then, not really regarded as two different words. Qian, money, and xian, cash. Of course, xian is not the only word with loads of different meanings. There are plenty of other such words, and indeed it is very rare that words only have one reading in Chinese. I realized that when learning other languages before, I had never come across this issue of extensive homophones. I had not learned many tonal languages where this could be the case either, well, at least not to the intermediate level of proficiency. All of this threw me slightly. The outcome was that my previous approaches to language learning did not fully work for Chinese. Previously, when learning new vocabulary, I'd be able to associate a word with the meaning more easily. Encountering a word in the other language, I'd memorize its shape, its pronunciation, and link to the English meaning. All languages I had previously learned had homophones, but these were typically exceptions rather than the rule, and stood out so much that I was able to remember them more easily, if anything. What to do about Chinese? I realized that looking at words in isolation would not really work. I had to learn chunks of the language and understand which words would be expected in certain contexts and which were not. I started to play out complex scenarios in my head, imagining using the language in context. For example, if in a shop situation, I would expect to talk about cash and not string, unless, of course, I was buying string, cables or the like. I would learn to expect certain words and not others, concentrating on the environment in which these words would appear. Learning vocabulary in context, such as 我想支付现金. I would like to pay with cash. Another aspect of the language that I noticed early on came up again. There is a strong preference to put two characters together to form a compound word, such as 支付, pay, consisting of 支, support, and 付, hand over or pay. Together, they make up the general word for pay. In the same way, 现金, cash, consists of 钱, cash, and 金, gold, which typically appear together like this when referring to cash. Even these two word combinations have homophones in different settings, such as 现金, advanced, 现金, nowadays, and 现金, to donate money. Yet, there are fewer of them, and thereby also fewer contexts in which they can appear, I guess. Once I realized that two character combinations were making up most words in Chinese, it became easier for me to understand how Chinese sentences were built up, which then in turn helped me to make headway with the homophones. The preference for two character combinations is strong. When there isn't a second element, Chinese often uses a filler word like zi, such as in the words for son, erzi, and daughter, nüer. I recognized the r bit, but was wondering why it was erzi and not nan-er. Nan is man and is parallel to nü woman. So following the pattern of nüer, woman, son, literally woman, son, well, I looked it up in the dictionary and I found out that nan-er is actually used, but it refers to man and not child. The er element in itself, though, generally refers to sun in two-word combinations, but I learned that it is used in a number of other contexts. When meaning sun, it appears together with this dummy z, because of the two-character preference of Chinese, and thus forming rz. When appearing in other combinations meaning sun, such as gu er, often, it can appear without the z, as there is a second element already adding some extra meaning. In this case, that second element is the gu, loan, so the z part is no longer needed to make up a two-character combination. Having two elements like this appearing together disambiguates the meaning and often makes it clearer which of the many homophones is used. Sometimes these combinations would involve three characters, two forming one whole and then combined with another one to add extra meaning. This was getting interesting. Sometimes the core meaning of one part would be used to combine with something else to make up a new meaning. I had learned the word for glasses, yanjing, alongside tai yangjing, sunglasses. These involve the words yan and yang. Yan means I and yang means positive or male, as in yin yang. Both of these sounded pretty similar to me though and made me investigate what was going on in these combinations. Once I looked at the writing, I figured out that the first bit means taiyang, sun. I realized that the glasses bit in this case no longer needed two elements to appear, but rather jing, lens or glass, could stand on its own in combination with sun to make the meaning sunglasses. At this stage, I was not always sure what the combinations were like. Could they be used differently? For example, could tai yan jing mean sunglasses as well, just using the tai element of sun and then yan jing as glasses? Or even a four-word combination such as tai yang yan jing, sunglasses? I did not dare to make up my own combinations just yet. Indeed, it was only much, much later that I started to experiment with putting words together in novel ways. However, knowing how the different elements could be put together made it easier for me to understand Chinese. It was like working with building blocks that could be arranged creatively. Once I knew the meaning of those building blocks, I was often able to understand the new combinations in context, and my comprehension improved a lot. Someone had said to me that Chinese takes a bit of an investment at first, but once you are over the first hurdles, you have a lot to draw on and the system becomes much clearer. I could finally see this now. Up until now, I have freely used the term word. Let's try to investigate this a little bit further. What is a word in Chinese? In my understanding up to now, there were two possible candidates. The individual written character, which roughly corresponds to spoken syllables, as well as those two or sometimes three character combinations. The question of what is a word is interesting, not just in the context of Chinese. When teaching linguistics to undergraduate students, this is usually one of the first things I do in class. Students think it's easy at first. I give them a sentence and ask them to tell me how many words there are. Let's try this example. You can also use the mobile app on your computer, but if you haven't been able to download it yet and encounter any issues, just send me a DM. Students tend to get to this eagerly. Words they know. They count the spaces between the different strings of letters, exclaiming that the elements around those spaces are words. But what to do in Chinese where characters are written together without any obvious gaps? How would you define word there? It is not quite as straightforward in English either. Once my students look at the sentence more carefully, they come across words that need some further investigation, like mobile app. Is this one word or two? There is a gap between the two elements, but what if we wrote it mobile-app instead? Would that be one word now? Next, they'd look at haven't and would consider it one word since there is no gap. Yet, it could also be written have not, in which case, surely it would be two words. Finally, DM is an acronym, short for direct message, which would be two words, surely. I'm deliberately introducing complications like these when teaching to make the students aware that the term word is actually quite ambiguous, even in English, and to introduce the way in which linguists deal with the question. We need more carefully worded distinctions, such as lexeme, a unit of lexical meaning, which can have various forms, such as by, bought, or buying, and for which the most representative form, by, would be available to look up in a regular dictionary. We can also approach words from the rolling grammar, such as at the sentence level. Thus, we can argue that mobile app is indeed one unit, referring to one thing. Gaps between elements are not necessarily the best way to define words, and additionally, when looking at Chinese, we will have to go beyond the gaps between elements method anyway, because there are just characters and there are no such gaps. Chinese, it appears, has two ways of referring to words. The concept of zi typically refers to the individual character in the written language, and it is often translated word, yet it is quite different from the concept of word in other languages. Linguistically, it corresponds more comfortably to what we call a morpheme, which is defined as the smallest meaningful unit. Morphemes can be words that stand on their own, or they can appear together with other morphemes to form independent words. Let's have a look at the English example, unopened. Now, this word consists of three such morphemes. Un, in unopened, this gives a negative meaning. Then there's open, which is the lexical meaning. And finally, it, ed, adding some grammatical information, in this case, allowing the word to be used as an adjective, describing things. The three different morphemes in unopened each have meaning. They are the smallest meaningful units, though not all of them can appear on their own. Un and it have to be attached to another morpheme in English. They have to be attached to open. This is similar to Chinese, where not all characters can appear on their own. So, coming back to the use of zi for word in Chinese, it makes sense to use it as a measurement for the internal structure of the language, because the zi element is so versatile. These elements can be used in a lot of different combinations, adding their original meaning. They are also the forms we would look up in a dictionary. Yet, for the latter reason, zi is sometimes used to refer to a two-character form that typically occurs together and may be looked up in a dictionary, such as xianjin, cash, that we discussed before. The term zi is, in this case, based on Chinese speakers' intuition that the individual elements are occurring together to form one meaning. There's another way to refer to word in Chinese, which is si. This term is used in more specialized environments and is preferred by Chinese linguists over zi. It has been described to refer to the smallest unit that can be used independently in Chinese based on meaning. For example, a zi in English would be a laptop, referring to a type of computer, while referring to the top of one's lap, as in laptop would constitute two zs. That seems to make sense. So, just like in English, word in Chinese is not as straightforward as one may think at first. Taking the idea of each individual character as a word does not quite satisfy the preference for two characters appearing together in Chinese and then their combined meaning. A solution is to use the concept of zi and refer to these elements that typically occur together as words. And indeed, when writing in pinyin, in the Latin transcription, these elements are written together, such as xianjin, cash, is written together rather than apart as two separate elements. With this discussion in mind, I realized that the Chinese writing system is not a proper word writing system after all. While its origins lie in the writing of individual concepts, it has since turned into something else, and characters do no longer entirely represent words. But this will be explored in another episode.